Hello and welcome to episode 17 of Meenal's World podcast. Apologize again that I delayed this podcast by a few days again. It's been very difficult to keep things on track, but I can imagine just like everybody else, we're trying to get our head around with what's happening in the world. And I mean, across the world, we're seeing such a big movement with the Black Lives Matter protests, and it's given us a lot of things to think about. So this episode is me starting a conversation. I don't know everything about racism. I don't know everything about discrimination and prejudice, but I'm learning, and I think now I'm ready to talk about it because I just needed a bit of time to understand really what was going on and how I can be a part of a change. And being part of a change starts with changing yourself first and understanding what you know and what you don't know. And now that I'm even having a baby girl coming in the next few weeks, I need to make sure that I teach her the right things, and I make sure that everything that I pass on to her is knowledge that can help her change the world even more. So this is me just starting a conversation about what I've seen personally, and what I hope to do as well. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And of course, this episode is supposed to be one of those episodes where we engage in a conversation. And if you have anything, any ideas that challenge my own ones, then they're more than welcome. Because I think that's when we can really create some big changes, when we challenge each other's ideas and then we're willing to learn from them as well. So let's jump right into the show. So as I mentioned, the last few months have been a huge eye-opener. And I think I realized as well that the realities of our institutions and the realities of our systems that control our lives and the lives of our families, their realities are now simmering to the surface. The reality of the world we live in, the realities of our politicians and our ministers are very transparent now, because it just seems like the world has crumbled in such a way that we've seen the true depth of corruption, the true depth of the cruelty of the leaders controlling our world. And I've never really had discussions of racism in my family, and mainly because, well, I don't think my parents noticed that they were being discriminated against, or I don't think they realized that anything that happened to them or anything that they had experienced was actually racism. And even if they did, I think it was one of those things where they just said, well, we just have to get on with it. My parents moved from India about 30, 40 years ago. And my dad was a fully qualified chartered accountant. But he was wiping, he was cleaning windows in shops in Gibraltar when he first came. He wasn't given that opportunity that he deserved. And every time he went in to apply for a job, every time he went into an office or even a bank and showed a CV, it was the man who got the job instead. So he ended up cleaning windows. He ended up selling radio parts of radios, actually, in those days, and MP3 players and walkie-talkies and all of that stuff, just because he had no other way around it. And he was working sort of three jobs at the same time because he had to send money back home to India to help his big family. And this is something my dad's never spoken about. And it's got to do with the whole hard-working generation, where they felt that suffering was part of their journey, and it's something they just had to deal with because they were born into that skin color, they were born into that race or religion, and suffering was part of it. And that's really sad to know that if you're born into a black community, to know that you're born into a South Asian community. You can take it even further to talk about even the caste system in India, to know that you're born into a lower caste, that your life is sort of carved for suffering. And that is a world where that shouldn't exist anymore. And I unfortunately, I realize that it still does. So my mom, on the other hand, who's qualified geography professor, came to Gibraltar, and because of family reasons and obviously because of the change of country, she couldn't find a job either, and she ended up just being a housewife to take care of a family. So from a South Asian perspective, we have suffered in our way. But now we're seeing the Black Lives Movement, and I'm not sitting here comparing our suffering to theirs or anything like that, but I think it's really important for us to understand that their suffering comes from a completely different history, and it's something we need to be aware of, because they are being prejudiced against because of the colour of their skin. They're being shot because of the colour of their skin. And it's a narrative that's been going on for many, many years, for decades, and for centuries, really, that people from Black communities are less than those from white communities. And it all goes down to the idea of British imperialism. And it was the British people who came to India, for example, who started the idea of fair skin. Because people in India saw these British people come in and they said, oh, these guys have fair skin, they're superior. And then they just associated that skin colour to superiority. And that's where the conversation started. So it just goes to show that actually we can live in a world where we can live in a society where this doesn't have to exist. But it's only started because of certain and specific points in history. And with the Black Lives Matter movement, I realized that the suffering of the Black community comes from a different history. And I didn't realize how bad it was, you know. I didn't realize how different it was to the suffering that we see in our South Asian communities. Of course, I mean, we had the British come and divide our country. We had them come and divide Hindustan into India and to Pakistan. And from there, we saw everything sort of, we saw the repercussions of that. And it's not about saying my suffering is worse than your suffering, but it's just about understanding that just because you come from a community or you come from a race where suffering has existed because of your skin color, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't appreciate or you shouldn't look into the suffering of those from different communities. And I think that's something that I took for granted. Coming from a South Asian background, I thought, well, I've had my fair bit of racism. I've had my fair bit of prejudice. I've been called a Paki enough. I've been called lots of different things under the sun. So that's my story and that's it. And that doesn't give you a free token to sort of say, okay, actually, you know what, I don't need to learn about other people. Because actually you do. And when you realize how connected we are as a world, when you realize that after school you will go to university, you will go to college, and you may even travel abroad, and even in your work, even if you stay in India, if you stay in the UK, you will come across people from different parts of the world. And it's really important you respect the culture, because there's no reason not to. There's absolutely no reason not to, because we've got enough information around us. We've got enough interaction on social media to understand what the world is going through. And this is something I've been saying for a long time, that we are global citizens. You know, we shouldn't see ourselves as I'm South Asian, or I'm British, or I'm American, or I'm Canadian. Yeah, we are, according to our passports, that's our identity. But actually, we have a responsibility to help others, even though they're not from our community. And one of the biggest wake-up calls for me was that when I saw one of our ministers, Priti Patel, who lots of people said at the beginning, oh, she's one of the first Indian women to be in the cabinet and to be a conservative member of the Tory party. But I'm going to say it out loud, but I actually really dislike her. And the reason I dislike her is because she uses that card. She says, I've had my fair share of racism. I am South Asian, so I understand what the black community is going through. Actually, no, you don't. You really don't. I mean, her Priti Patel's parent, Priti Patel's case, her parents came from Uganda, and they fled Uganda and came to the UK, and they started their own life, and they sent her to school, and she built her own career from that, which is admirable in itself. I mean, you know, people, you can't deny anybody's hard work, but for her to say to another black minister in the House of Commons that I understand what your people are going through because I have had my share of racism, that is not okay. That is not okay, because racism comes in so many different forms, and racist comments have their own history. So this is what I wanted to talk about today. I really wanted to really emphasize the fact that I've realized that my past, my interactions, my experiences doesn't give me a free out of jail card to say I didn't have to spend time understanding the suffering of others. And it's been more prominent now more than ever, especially because of my legal challenge and because of my case of taking the government to court. I have realized that the UK, especially when they look at British Asian ethnic minority groups, they look at us as one. So you have British Asian ethnic minorities as one community, and then you have white people as another community. And I think that's where the issue is. And that the issue is there because within the British Asian ethnic minority groups, you've got Sri Lankans, you've got Indians, you've got Bangladeshis, you've got Pakistanis. And those subset of groups have their own needs. And that's what's being ignored. And this is why when we look at racism, we have to understand it from the same aspect, that just because you're looking at black people against white people or people of color versus white people, that's not okay, because you can't generalize that. People of color, you've got South Asians, you've got Eastern Asians, you've got people from all different parts of the world, from different parts of Africa as well, and they have had their own history. And one of our cases in this whole legal challenge that we're taking the government to court to is that, well, you know that ethnic minorities are at higher risk for certain diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular disease. You also know that reports and studies have been done over the last 20, 30 years and no one's actually acted on it. So the fact that our government, I'm talking about the UK, our government has had these reports in front of them for decades and chose not to act on it or chose not to make a plan of action to help those communities, that in itself is racist. It's like racism wrapped in institutional racism. That's the only way I can describe it. And this is the most dangerous type of racism. This is the subtle racism. And I'll explain why. Subtle racism is one of those things where you need to be smart to pick up. You need to actually like think about it and then say it and make that racist comment or make that racist action to the extent that the other person might not even realize that you've been racist to them or they've been racially abused. As I said earlier, that even not acknowledging the fact that there are other communities that have suffered as well, even just sitting back and saying, actually, my community has suffered, I've had my fair share of racism, I don't have to be a part of another movement, that in itself is racist. because you are actively choosing not to help another minority group. And if you speak up only when South Asians are racist, just like Priti Patel, when she said in the House of Commons that I have had my share of racism, I was called a Paki. If you only speak up when you see racism towards your own community, but then you decide or you choose not to speak up when you see racism towards the caste system, when you see males make sexist comments against women, when you see transphobic comments or homophobic comments, when you choose to stay quiet in those, that's when you are part of the whole process of continuous oppression. Because different communities and different societies will continue to be oppressed if each individual does not act up when it's something that doesn't affect them. We can't have black communities continuing to fight for black communities. You're getting people who are already oppressed, who are already being stepped on, who are already being kicked to the ground, to fight for their rights. How is that something that you think would work? We're kicking these people to the ground. We're saying that you're not worthy. Black people are literally being run over by cars, especially in the States. We're pushing these people to the ground constantly by our institutions, by not allowing these people to get housing benefits, by not allowing these people to have these opportunities to go to university, by not allowing these people to even reach positions of leadership roles. And then we expect them to fight for themselves, despite being kicked to the ground. That's not how it works. This is a time where other communities have to come in, put their hand out and say, let me lift you up. Let me lift your community up from the ground. And when we've lifted you up from the ground, then you can work your way up and find and fight for these causes and fight for your rights. The death of George Floyd, it resonated across the world. This is not a moment in history. This is a movement in history that we're seeing. We're seeing people toppling down statues. And I have to say, when I saw that, I did grin. I had a nice big grin on my face because I was like, finally something is being done. Yeah, it's extreme, but we have to knock down these institutions now and say, we've had enough of you. And seeing that our leaders are so insensitive towards this racism just shows that they're simply not qualified for their roles. And this is the thing, you've got people in high positions like Donald Trump, you've got, in our case, Boris Johnson. These people are there just to keep their white friends rich, and we know that. And it just seems that racism is at the heart of many institutions. I'm talking about British institutions, and we can see it in the American system as well. And if we look to India, I will admit I'm not as well read on the political system there, but I think the idea is still there, that they want to just keep themselves rich and they want to keep their friends rich. And whether they do that through acts of racism or whether they do that through acts of casteism or sexism, it's still a tool they use and a weapon they use just to make sure that they're in privileged positions, they stay in privileged positions, and everybody else around them does the same. And this has been going on for centuries. It's been going on for decades and centuries. And the only way we can actually knock this down is like looking at a house that's been built on such a bad base where every brick that has been laid on top of itself is not sturdy enough and it's shaking and no one has started to chip away at it. And this is what we need to do. We need to start chipping away through these systems and say, okay, how can we actually just completely start from scratch? And this is why we're seeing such extreme movements. We're seeing statues being toppled down. We're seeing people looting stores in Minneapolis. And when George Floyd died a few days later, we saw, Target was burnt down. We saw all these stalls being burned down, and this is the anger that's going through the community. This is the rage. And I mean, people were like, oh yeah, but businesses have lost their money. How are businesses going to get back? But I mean, America and the and Great Britain, they've looted countries. They've taken away goods from these countries like India, and Africa. I mean, you can really you can build a Target again. It's not the end of the world. But it just shows the anger. It shows the resentment. And you can sit down and say, well, but you don't have to actually make things violent. You don't have to. No, actually, but people have tried peaceful protests. People have tried to get their voice heard, and it didn't work. They tried screaming from the rooftops. It didn't work. And this was the last resort. And we are nobody to judge that, because we haven't gone through the extent of pain that these communities have. So you can't sit back as a brown person and say, or even as a brown person or of any ethnic minority and say, actually, these guys shouldn't be doing it. No, that's not your, and you're in no position to say that, because your family and your skin color doesn't have the same history as them. And this is what we really need to understand, is that if we can't always put ourselves in their shoes, because we'll never be able to do that. But we have to start empathizing with these people and actually understand why are they taking these steps. And to do that, we actually have to unlearn a lot of things. I mean, when I was in school, and we talk about young kids learning about history, and the history of their country. If you think about what you learned in your history class, and go back to when you were a young child, what did you learn? Because I learned about the Tudors, I learned about British imperialism, I learned about Queen Victoria, and it seems like we've been drip-fed this narrative that white people are always going to be at the top. We're drip-fed this narrative that everything that the British did or Americans did was for the greatness of their country, and it was okay. I learned about World War II only because, and this is really shocking for me to say, and I didn't think about it until a few days ago. World War II only came into our system, into our education system, because there was a charity that was fighting for it. They said, actually, kids need to know about the realities of what happened. And it was this same charity that arranged a trip for us to go to Auschwitz in Poland to visit these concentration camps and to understand the severity of what really happened. We even met some survivors of the Holocaust. That, for me, that one sort of branch of my history learning is the only thing that stuck to my head. I mean, I don't remember anything about the Tudors or Queen Victoria or anything like that. Because the system is made to make kids believe and to shape their brains in a sort of way that they believe that these institutions and these systems that we're living under are okay. And my parents went through the same thing as well. This is how they were taught at school. They pass it on to me. And I think that's why my parents, they didn't have these conversations at home. So when they speak to me, they're like, well, why are you sitting down reading these books? Who's it going to help? Actually, it might help me change. And if I can change, then I can help my neighbors. I can help my friends. If I'm in the hospital and I see a colleague of mine getting racially abused, I can actually step in and say, actually, you know, this needs to stop. And to do that, you need to have that education, that self-learning, to develop that empathy and to develop that compassion. You can't, like, I mean, if you're talking about someone who's actually an extreme racist, changing that person would be quite difficult. That's a whole different type of character and different type of people that I won't go into. But I'm just talking about people like you, people like me, who want to help, who want to try and be part of this global movement, but don't really know where to start. And what I will say is that, just going back to the house, I was saying that, you know, that when you knock that down, we have to start from scratch. And I put a really interesting post up on Instagram a few days ago, and it talks about equality and equity. And we're actually not fighting for an equal society, because fighting for an equal society means giving everybody the same resources. So if you're giving a white rich man the same resource as a poor black man, the white rich man, who's already elevated in society, will be elevated even more compared to the black man. And that's not what we want. We want equity. And equity means giving each individual the resources they need specific to their needs. So if you have a black man versus a white man, then maybe your resources would change. Because you know the white man's already elevated in society. So maybe you would say, actually, he just needs a few things. But for the black man, you would say, okay, he needs A, B, C, D, E, and actually work on that. And then people can come on the same level. But we're not even at that stage in our societies yet. This whole idea of equity barely exists because everyone is trying to fight for an equal society and use that as an excuse to say, actually, everyone deserves the same thing. So I want everyone who's listening today, I want you to think about that. Like, what can we do as South Asians? What can we do as brown people? Even if you're white, even if you're from a white community, what can we do to change things? And one of the things that I've learned is that we have to unlearn a lot of things, especially as South Asians, when our parents say, yeah, but you can't change the world, you're just one person, what can you do? Or when our parents say, just leave it, don't waste your time, you've got other things to think about, this is not your battle to fight, that's what you need to question, and you shouldn't give in to any of that. Things like, I mean, have you ever used a Fair and Lovely cream? Have you ever thought about whitening your skin? Have you ever felt scared that your skin's gonna get tanned when you go outside? Think about why these things come to your head. Is it because it's a narrative that's gone down your family or in your community? And how can you change that? How can you make sure that you have these conversations with your parents and your community and your friends as well? And I'm going to be very honest. I've lost a lot of friends in the last few months, and I couldn't be happier. I've lost a lot of connections with my family, a lot of connections with my friends, and I've said, you are not worthy of my time, because no matter how much I try to explain things to you, you choose to ignore. You choose to ignore the reality. So just think about what you're doing right now. Are you trying to make noise on social media, posting things on your stories? That's great, because you're trying to show your followers some new content, new pieces of information, which is great. But then what are you doing when you switch your phone off? What are you doing before you go to bed? What are you doing when you go out to the shops and you see people from different communities? Have you reached out to an NGO who could use your help and your skills? Because remember, we all have skills. We all have a certain degree of knowledge that we can help people with. Even if you know how to make a website, reach out to these NGOs and say, actually, this is my skill. How can I use it to help you? So hierarchy will always exist in our societies and will continue to be there for a very long time. I'm not saying that we have to completely abolish everything, because it won't happen in our generation. But we need to close a gap. And it takes generations and generations for us to break specific cycles, and toxic cycles especially. So just listen. And if you feel that you are wrong, if you feel that you've made those mistakes, that's fine. Rise above that fear. Create that space for learning and understanding. And start taking action. Change yourself. Change the conversations you have with your family. Because this is not just one moment in history. This is a movement. And this is really going to change the course of history now. This is going to change the direction in which our politics will go, our society will go as well. So I haven't realized that I've been speaking for half an hour, and I didn't realize I was capable of doing that as well. But I hope this conversation helps. And for me, this was just a way to start the conversation about racism and prejudice. I have a lot more to learn, and I'll continue recording myself when I learn more things. I'll try to speak to different people for interviews. I just haven't had a chance to do that because of lockdown. I'll keep trying to talk to different people and say, okay, I didn't actually know about this. How can you teach me? So the next few episodes hopefully will be a build-up on this. And I want to hear back from you. I want to hear back from your stories. And if you disagree with me, please let me know, because I love to learn and I want to know more about how I can change my own opinions and my own thoughts. So you can get in touch with me on social media at Meenal's World. I'm very active, especially on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not very good at Facebook, but I think it's something that I need to keep tabs on. So please get in touch. You can also send me an email to meenalsworldpodcast@gmail.com. And we can get some more conversations going. But this is going to go on for a very, very long time. And I hope everybody who's listening in has created an action plan to see how they can change and help people. So stay safe, stay healthy, keep learning. And I will also just add one last thing. And that this whole movement that we're seeing can be very mentally draining. It can make you angry, it can make you sad, it can make you depressed. Make sure you take those breaks off social media, make sure that you take those fresh walks and meditate or do whatever you need to relax. The world needs you, we all need you, but we can only use your passion and skills if you take care of yourself. If not, being angry is not going to help anybody, being upset is not going to help anybody. So try use that in a way to enforce and fuel more change. So we need to keep our foot on the gas. We need to keep going. And we're all in this together. So I'll see you all next week.